Might commence to read at verse 27. Acts chapter 11, verse 27. And in these days came prophets from Jerusalem unto Antioch, and there stood up one of them named Agabus, and signified by the Spirit that there should be great dearth throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea, which also they did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Before dealing with the subject allocated to me, I want you with me to look at the conditions in the world when those early Christians lived, that is, the Christians in the book of the Acts. And we shall discover that the world of the Acts was in fact no different to the world of today. Of this we need to remind ourselves, that the world of the book of the Acts was no different to the world of today. If we live today when, in the matter of acquiring wealth, men are quite unprincipled and unscrupulous, so it was in the days of the early church. If we live in a day of corruption in high places, so was it in those early days of church history. In the book of the Acts, we discover that, on the one hand, men are ready to acquire money by base means, and on the other hand, they are prepared to part with it for personal advancement. In Acts chapter 16, we read of one who brought her masters much gain. In Acts chapter 19, we read of no small great gain being brought to certain craftsmen. In Acts chapter 16, you will remember that there we have businessmen at Philippi, and they're making much gain from the ravings of a demon-possessed girl, deceiving the people that this damsel could answer their questions and tell their future. And when they saw that this wicked way of making gain was gone, they were prepared to incite the multitude by propagating lies against the servants of God and having them beaten and cast into prison. In Acts chapter 19, we have those craftsmen at Ephesus who received no small gain by exploiting a religion, making model shrines of and for Diana, portraying her as a many-breasted goddess. And when the spread of the gospel threatened their wealth, they were full of wrath. They filled the city with confusion. They arrested Paul's companions and put Paul's life in jeopardy, making gain by base means. In Acts chapter 22, we read of an officer who paid a great sum to obtain Roman citizenship for personal position and personal advantage. In those days, too, there was corruption in high places. Acts chapter 24 tells us how that Felix had hoped that money should have been given him by Paul, that he might loose Paul. Of course, we are well aware of this, that even had Paul had the money, he would never have given it. He would have never have participated in this bribery. Thus, the world of that day was in fact no different to the world of the day in which we live. However, against the background of these conditions in the book of the Acts, how refreshing it is to read of those early Christians and their attitude to money and how lightly they held this world's goods. From Acts 1 to 12, Jerusalem is the center, and the history revolves around the Apostle Peter. He's the main actor from Acts 1 to 12. And said the Apostle Peter in Acts chapter 3, "Silver and gold have I none, but such as I have give I unto thee." From Acts 13 to Acts 28, Antioch is the center. And the history now revolves around the Apostle Paul, who could say in Acts chapter 20, "I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel, these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. Thus, from the book of the Acts, we discover that the foremost preachers of those early days, they were in fact poor men. They held lightly the wealth of this world. What about the converts of those days? Come with me now to the book of the Acts, and we visit Ephesus. And we're told in Acts chapter 19 and verse 18 that many that believed came and confessed and showed their deeds. They revealed their spells by which they've been making gain. Then the next verse says, many of them also which used curious arts, who were engaged in magic, who were pretending to supernatural powers, they brought their books together and burned them before all. And they counted the price of them and found it 50,000 pieces of silver. Here were the converts burning their bridges. There could be no return. They could not continue with their ill-gotten gain. Nor would these converts sell their scrolls and retain the money. Not even giving the money to the poor. After all, why sell to the unconverted what hitherto had damned their own souls? These early converts in Acts chapter 19, the result of this, there were 50,000 pieces of silver, the poorer, but immeasurably richer in faith. Now think of the early church. A reading of the early chapters of the book of the Acts makes it clear that the early church was a commonwealth in the real sense of the word. For that is the simple meaning of Acts chapter 2 and verse 44. And all that believed were together and had all things in common. It was a commonwealth. Thus we read again in Acts chapter 4, verse 32, they had all things in common. But how was this made possible? Two words sum it up. They sold and they parted. Two delightful expressions. This characterized the early saints. They sold and they parted. Acts 1 verse 45 says, they sold their possessions, that is their lands and their estates, and their goods, their personal possessions, and parted them all as every man had need. They sold and parted. In Acts chapter 4 we read, Acts 4 verse 32, and the multitude of them that believed were of one heart and of one soul. Neither said any of them that out of the things which he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. It was, in the true sense of the word, a commonwealth. But the language of Acts chapter 4 suggests a different practice to Acts chapter 2. In Acts chapter 2, the two words are they sold and they parted. But the language of Acts chapter 4 is they sold and they brought. Acts 2, they sold and parted. Acts chapter 4, they sold and brought. Acts 4 verse 34 says, for as many as were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the prices of the things that were sold and laid them down at the apostles' feet, and distribution was made unto every man according as he had need. In Acts chapter 2, sold and parted was because of an immediate need. In Acts chapter 4, sold and brought was in view of a recurring need. This is how the early saints behaved themselves. The apostles in Acts chapter 4, as we've read, were entrusted with the distribution of the funds. The proceeds were laid at the apostles' feet, and the apostles were entrusted with the distribution of the funds. And we shall see that this, in fact, was the case in Acts chapter 11. Now, this indicates that the funds were placed in the hands of a plurality of trusted and reliable men. And this, of course, is absolutely necessary, that the funds of the saints should be entrusted to the hands of a plurality of trusted and reliable men. My dear brethren, money can have such an influence that it can become a very powerful weapon. There can be, on the one hand, by the expectant donnies, the curring of favour. And on the other hand, on the bestar, or on the part of those who would give the money, the donors, an obtaining of unwarranted power. Thus the early church, they saw to it that the funds were distributed by a plurality of worthy and reliable men. But as is always the case, and this we saw, was it on Monday evening, ideal conditions, because of the flesh, even in the best, can lead to discrepancies and abuse. In the early church, there were tragic discrepancies. Three in particular. In Acts chapter 5, there was deceit by donors. In Acts chapter 6, there was discontent amongst the donees, that is, the recipients. And in Acts chapter 8, money revealed or detected a mere professor. Three difficulties: deceit by donors, discontent by donees, and the detection of a mere professor. Now briefly, we'll look at these things. In Acts chapter 5, and this has already been dealt with, we have the case of Ananias and Sapphira, who sold a possession and kept back part of the price and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. And here we have the third recurrence of the expression, sold and brought. This is what they did. Here was a brother and a sister, a husband and a wife, purporting to be donors as others were, but guilty of deceit. Selling and bringing like others, but guilty of deceit. We were reminded that there was no legislation nor command, even by the apostles, that those early saints should sell and bring. Ananias and Sapphira became a tool of Satan over money. They didn't want to be seen lagging behind the other devoted saints, but Satan, no doubt, operated upon their love of possessions. How tragic that having laid their deceptive contribution at the apostles' feet, they themselves fell down dead at the same apostles' feet. Then in Acts chapter 6, we have discontent amongst the donees. It was a complaint of inequality in the distribution of the fund, that the widows of the Greek-speaking converted Jews in the church at Jerusalem were being neglected in the daily ministration at the expense, no doubt, of the widows amongst the converted Hebrew-speaking Jews. Interesting to observe how this matter was dealt with. "Why," said the 12, "it is not reason that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Wherefore, brethren, look out among you 7 men of honest report, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business." We have very valuable principles brought before us in Acts chapter 6 that really we haven't time to deal with. But notice, it was the church who made a choice of the 7 men who were to deal with this matter. And I believe, my dear brethren, that there is a lesson here in this, that the church must have a voice in what it gives. No elders, no matter their spiritual status and experience, ought ever to have the first and the last and the only word with what is done with the collection. "Thus," said the apostles, "you make a choice of 7 men." And having made a choice of these 7 men, the apostles appointed them. And it's interesting to observe, and we don't go into the details of this, but the 7 men who were chosen had all Hellenistic names. They came from those from amongst whom the complaint was being made. Oh, the wondrous grace in this matter. Lessons could be learned from that, but we move on. In Acts chapter 8, we have the detection of a mere professor. It's the case of Simon the sorcerer, who attempted to procure by money spiritual power. From his name has come the word simony. And simony simply means the buying or selling of spiritual office. Spiritual power cannot be obtained by money, nor can it even be obtained by education. Here a man who was prepared to pay money for spiritual power, and money detected the presence of a mere professor amongst the early saints. Now we revert to the practice of the saints in the book of the Acts in the matter of giving. We've observed Acts 2, they sold and parted for immediate need. Acts 4 and 5, they sold and brought for a recurring need. But this practice involving having all things in common, these were possible where the church was confined to some large extent to the city of Jerusalem. But after the stoning of Stephen and the consequent dispersion of the saints from Jerusalem, the gospel was being preached outside of Jerusalem, and souls were being saved, and assemblies planted away from Jerusalem. With the spread of the gospel, and the scattering of saints, and the planting of these assemblies, different practices became necessary. But these practices retained the principle of having all things in common. And my dear brethren, while today we would not carry out the practices of the early saints, yet the principle of having all things in common still remains. This was taught in subsequent epistles. You may remember that in Romans chapter 12, Paul speaks in one verse of distributing to the necessities of the saints and giving to hospitality. Distributing to their necessities, that's holding my possessions to help the saints when the saints might be in need. And given to hospitality is a preparedness to share my home should the saints need the use of the enjoyment of my home. And it's interesting, dear brethren, to observe that the expression distributing to the necessities of the saints means sharing. It's an act of fellowship. Thus, when I give to a needy saint, it's not merely the matter of giving. It's the matter of sharing what I have. That's the meaning of the word distributing or communicating. It's not just giving. It's sharing. And my dear brethren, we ought still in these days to be prepared, and that with a glad heart, to share our possessions and our homes with the Lord's people. I wonder if we're doing that today. Or has this idea of the Commonwealth so departed from us that we're more concerned with a big bank and a lavish house than sharing what we have with the Lord's people? This brings us now to Acts chapter 11, verses 29 and 30. The scene, of course, in these verses is Antioch. And we discover that Antioch becomes the place of divine operations in the gospel. Interesting to observe how this place became the focal point of divine operations in the gospel. We've been hearing of an impending work in the gospel here in Ayrshire. It's lovely to think that could become the point of divine operations in the gospel. We discover that it involved a matter of four visitations. Number one, there was a visit of the saints of the dispersion. That is, the saints dispersed consequent upon the stoning of Stephen. These evangelized Antioch. A visit by dispersed saints who evangelized Antioch. Then Barnabas was sent by the Jerusalem church, and he was amongst them there as a pastor. Then we're told how that Barnabas brought Saul, who remained a whole year there, and he remained amongst them as a teacher. Then prophets came down from Jerusalem, one called Agabus, and thus there were prophets amongst them. It became the focal point of a divine visitation. As for the saints of the dispersion, we're told, they were come. As for Barnabas, he was sent. As for Saul, he was brought. As for the prophets, they came. Isn't it interesting thus to observe the movements of God, because God had souls there. Then verse 29 to 30. Then the disciples, every man according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea, which also they did, and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. Here we have Agabus, a prophet, who has signified by the Spirit that there should be a great dearth throughout all the world, throughout the habitable world, perhaps the Roman Empire. Agabus, of course, is mentioned twice in the book of the Acts. He's mentioned again in chapter 21, and Agabus appears to be a prophet of bad news. In Acts chapter 21, he foretells Paul's imprisonment. Here in Acts chapter 11, he foretells a famine or a death. But notice, he foretells an impending famine. My dear brethren, let's be very clear about this, that this was no request for charity. Agabus was making no request for charity. He, in fact, was making no appeal for help. Agabus, in fact, wasn't begging anything. This was but a prediction by the Holy Spirit. We do well, dear brethren, to learn lessons from this. We speak so much about telling God our problems and difficulties and otherwise, but we discover we're so ready to tell our brethren about it. Agabus wasn't appealing for help. He wasn't appealing for charity. He was simply, by the Spirit of God, making a prediction. Now, in this matter of the funds in Acts chapter 11, we think, first of all, of the donors. Who were they? Verse 29 says, "Then the disciples, every man according to his ability." The donors were the disciples. Who were these disciples? Certain at Antioch, the verses tell us, who had believed and turned to the Lord, verse 21, in whose life there was evidence of the grace of God, for Barnabas saw it, and who, if they heeded to Barnabas's exhortation, they were cleaving to the Lord, verse 23, and according to verse 24, they had been added to the Lord, and in verse 26, they were called Christians. These were the donors, disciples. My dear brethren, I believe the most liberal givers in the world today ought to be the Lord's people. Let me remind you of this, that giving is at the very heart of Christianity. God gave his Son. God's Son gave his life. And we're here tonight saved by divine grace because there was one who, though he were rich, for our sakes, he became poor. It's remarkable to observe that when the apostle is exhorting the saints at Corinth to liberality in their giving, he writes two verses that we often quote in the Lord's Morning. What are they? "Ye know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, though he were rich. For your sakes he became poor, that ye through his poverty might be made rich. And thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift." My dear brethren, if these truths gripped our hearts and minds as disciples, we could not ourselves but be givers. Thus the donors were the disciples. But notice, not only disciples, but the disciples, every man. Thus, in this matter, there were no exceptions. The disciples and every man. Somewhat similar to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. "Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by in store as God hath prospered him. Let every one of you..." And remember that at Corinth, there were the rich and there were the poor. 1 Corinthians chapter 11 speaks of those who had, as shaming them who had not. But when it's this matter of giving, it's every man, the rich and the poor, indicating that every one of us, if we're disciples, whether we're rich or poor, must be exercised in this matter of giving. But then not only was it the disciples and every man, but it was according to his ability, that is, as they prospered. Though not quite the same thought as in 1 Corinthians 16, where Paul says, "as God hath prospered him." In fact, neither is the expression "every man" in Acts chapter 11 the same as it occurs in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. In 1 Corinthians 16 it is, let every one of you lay by him in store. But the rendering of Acts chapter 11 verse 29 is this, as any one of the disciples was well off. That's how it ought to read. And the disciples, as any one of them was well off. Now here we have an important point. Their giving was not a stated amount from each, nor was it the tithe as predicted in the Old Testament. It was according to their prosperity. My dear brethren, I say this kindly. It is generally accepted that people do not always give as they become well off. But this is how the early saints gave. They gave as they became well off. Very often, the poorest saints today and the poorest assemblies are the most liberal givers. And brethren, here and there, I should like to say this. The ambition to be well off can get into the souls of the Lord's people. So much so that the more they have, the more they want. The more they possess, the more possessive they become. Why, says the Old Testament, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. He that loveth increase shall not be satisfied with abundance. My brother, my sister, let me just say this. There ought to be a vast difference between the man of the world and the child of God. In Ephesians chapter 5, the apostle says, let him that stole steal no more, but let him work with his hands the thing that is good, that he might have to give to him that needeth. Generally speaking, men of the world work to have, but the Christian works to have to give to him that needeth. I trust, my dear brother, my dear sister, your aim is not how much you can put into the bank each week. I trust you're not working to that end, nor conducting your business to that end. The early saints gave as they became well off. And the child of God, says Paul, doesn't work to have. He works to have to give. Then the next expression is, they determined to send. This involves a definite resolve on the part of these early saints. And this idea, determined to send, means to mark out definitely. In fact, there are only other two occurrences of this word in the book of the Acts, and both are used of our God. Acts chapter 2, him being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God. Acts chapter 17, and God hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times or the seasons before appointed and the bounds. The thought appeals to be this, that these saints at Antioch, they made a determinate resolve not only to send, but how much they would send. The word involves that. Not only a determinate resolve to send, but how much, in fact, they ought to send. Why the thought, dear brethren, of our brethren being in need ought to touch our hearts. It touched the hearts of the saints at Antioch. You remember the language of John in his first epistle in chapter 3. Whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? Says John, it becomes the question of the love of God in a man. My dear brethren, the God who had our creature need upon his heart, he determined the appropriate seasons and the boundaries of man's dwelling. Acts chapter 17. And to the God who had our spiritual and eternal need upon his heart, the cross, says Acts chapter 2, was part of his predeterminate plan. Now, says John, the love of this same God in you and in me ought to open up our bowels of compassion at the sight of a brother's need. But they determined to send relief. Now, what is the thought in this word relief? It means more than the direct easing of a burden. It means more than the relieving of a need. If you care to consult it, you'll discover the word is ministration. It's the same word as occurs in Acts chapter 6, verse 1. Their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. Seems to suggest that they contributed to a fund from which distribution would be made to help those that were in need. Now think with me of the donees, that is, the recipients of these gifts. Who were they? They sent relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. Thus here we have in Acts chapter 11, Gentiles, saved by divine grace, sending help to Jews who had been saved by divine grace, who were now their brethren. Walls have been broken down, bridges have been built, enmity has been slain by the grace of God. My dear brethren, it took nothing short of divine grace to enable Peter and John in Acts chapter 8 to go down to Samaria and lay their hands upon the Samaritans. But it took nothing short of divine grace to exercise the heart of these Gentiles in Antioch to send relief to the Jews in those days. And in fact, for the Jews to accept help from these Gentiles. But the relationship involved was brethren. It was the brethren who dwelt in Judea, and praise God for something that surmounts every barrier, whether it be color or race or any other thing. Not only was there grace involved here, but a debt was involved. This is brought before us in Romans chapter 15, although Paul is there relating to quite another incident. Says Paul in Romans chapter 15 and verse 25, "But now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints, for it hath pleased them of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor of the saints which are at Jerusalem. It hath pleased them verily, and their debtors they are. For if the Gentiles have been made partakers of their spiritual things, their duty is also to minister unto them in carnal things." Thus it was in Acts chapter 11. Spiritual things had flowed into Antioch. And now carnal things were flowing back from Antioch to Judea. What were the spiritual things that had flowed into Antioch? The gospel had been preached by unnamed disciples of the dispersion. They had enjoyed exhortation by that good man Barnabas sent from Jerusalem. Teaching by Saul, a converted Jew. Revelation and predictions from certain prophets from Jerusalem. These were the spiritual things that flowed from Jerusalem into Antioch. And now the carnal things. Relief, financial, and no doubt otherwise for an impending need. Paul speaks of the same thing in 1 Corinthians 9, though we can't stay to speak of that now. We'll come now to the next expression, which also they did. I love that. They did it immediately. In other words, this determination on their part was translated into deeds. In other words, the matter got off the ground. It got beyond the committee stage, perhaps because there was no committee. They didn't doubt Agabus' prediction, nor did they feel it incumbent to wait until the death took place before they sent relief. There weren't the arguments, what if Agabus could be wrong? What if those Jewish brethren would to misspend what we've worked so hard for? My dear brethren, it's the easiest thing, and I say this kindly, it's the easiest thing to find an excuse for not giving. And I would add to that just this. My dear brethren, better to make a mistake in giving than to make a mistake in not giving, which also they did. Now briefly, the trustees. This was sent to the elders. These men, because of who they were worthy trustees. We've already seen that in Acts chapter 4, the apostles were the trustees of the saints' collection. Well, Acts chapter 6 makes it clear that the assembly must have a say with regard to what is done, with what it gives, yet the apostles there remain the dispersers of the collection. My dear brethren, it's so necessary to have worthy trustees, to avoid misdemeanor, and avoid suspicion. Obviously, there must be, in the first hand, a plurality of persons involved. The trustees were the elders, a plurality of persons. To avoid abuse of the power that money can give, it would be quite wrong to delegate sole authority for distribution to one man. The result then can be, whom he will, he slays, and whom he wills, he keeps alive. The trustees here were the elders. Of the elders, Paul says, 1 Timothy 3, not greedy of filthy lucre. Money, of course, of itself is not filthy lucre, but money made out of religious matters. That's the idea. That is filthy lucre. I know some omit that in 1 Timothy 3, but it occurs certainly in Titus chapter 1. The elder must not be covetous, must not be a lover of money. He must have a good report of them that are without. And these are the trusted men who ought to be, in fact, the trustees of the collection of the saints. Most important matters. But I close, time has gone, by saying this. They sent this by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. What worthy men, the hands of Barnabas and Saul. We think of these two men. Barnabas was a good man, a man who himself had sold his land and laid it at the apostles' feet. He was a worthy man by whom this gift could be sent. And as for the apostle Paul, a man who coveted no man's silver nor gold, but whose hands administered not only to his own necessities, but of those who were with him, sent by these trusted hands to these trusted men at Antioch for the disbursement to the saints in need there.